Good morning. The hour of 8:30 has arrived. I'm calling the State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee for Tuesday, March 19th, 2024 to order. A quorum is present. Representative Abagé will be with you in just 1 second. Minute approval?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Is there any discussion to the minutes of March 14th, 2024? Seeing none, all those in favor of adoption of the minutes for March 14th, 2024, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Next, we have on board House File 4043, Representative Abagé. Good morning and welcome to the committee. Since you're not a member of the committee, I will move that House File 4043 be re-referred to the General Register. When you're ready, if you'd please just tell us about your bill.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know if you also wanted me to move the A1 amendment now or afterwards.
Let's talk about the bill.
Okay.
You can even discuss it as amended, but we'll hold off on the vote for you.
Sure. Mm-hmm. No problem. Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. Today, I'm presenting House File 4043. Which is also known as the Prison Gerrymandering Reform Bill. I'll talk about it in addition to the A1 amendment that I would like to include, so the whole presentation will encompass both. Prison gerrymandering is an unfortunate flaw in our census collection system that over time has led to imbalances in the population count. When the census first began, the main concern was the relative population between states, as that data was used to determine representation in the U.S. House of Representatives. As the United States grew, states started using the census population data to determine local jurisdictions and their state-level representation. This meant that jurisdictions that contained prisons could count incarcerated persons as residents and attain a boost in representation based on imbalanced numbers without the participation of the incarcerated people in the community of the prison. It meant that the home communities where prisoners had come from would lose their portion of political power in the state based on population. While the Census Bureau has not yet decided to act on this, states are using their power to reallocate the data that comes from the census every 10 years to ensure a more accurate count for the state jurisdiction purposes. This bill before you lays out that for the 2030 census and beyond in Minnesota, the Minnesota Department of Corrections and the Legislative Coordinating Commission will begin to reallocate incarcerated persons in state and federal prisons to the census blocks where they came from, rather than to the jurisdiction of the prison. The Department of Corrections will collect the prior addresses of incarcerated persons, then send that data to the LCC. The LCC will then reallocate the known address of each incarcerated person to the census block of their home community. And then the A1 amendment just clarifies that some of the data terminology related to the precision of addresses, making it non-reliant on one particular GIS mapping product, but more generalized to the location area that it's looking for. And this is important because most incarcerated people do not reside in the communities where the prison is located. And in fact, according to DOC data from 2021, 95% of those released from prison actually return to their home communities. The data collected will closely track the census categories so that the LCC can properly reallocate people to the census block where they came from. For those without a last known address, those who have an address outside of the state, or those who do not wish to provide an address, the incarcerated person will be included in Minnesota's statewide count. By starting now, we can prepare for the 2030 census and ensure that Minnesotans are being counted and represented fairly. And with that, if there are testifiers signed up, I'll turn it to them. Otherwise, take questions from the committee.
Thank you very much, Representative Abagé. We don't have any testifiers with us, but let's get the bill in the order that you would like it to be in.
Sure.
Is there any discussion to the A1? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A1, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion prevails and the A1 is adopted. Is there anyone from the public who would like to discuss 4043 as amended? Seeing none, we'll move to member discussion. Members, any questions for Representative Abaje? Representative Nadeau.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Abaje. Can you, I think I understand what you're doing here, and I don't think I disagree with it. I'm wondering, should we expand this to out-of-home placement for Minnesotans who are in our criminal justice system out of state? Should we expand it to university students, students in colleges across the state? Should we expand it to encapsulate and accommodate all of those people?
Representative Abaje.
Madam Chair, Representative Nadeau, so most of those other categories you listed are actually, since they're outside of the prison system, are already able to fill out the census and self-report at the address where they reside. I think the issue here is that what has been happening in states like Minnesota is that we've just been counting people who are incarcerated as if they don't have a choice, and so we just put them in the location where the prison is. What other states have been doing is saying, actually, most of these prisoners are going to go back to where they previously came from. So like a college student who can decide, do I want to be counted at my dorm or do I want to be counted at my parents' house, what we're now saying is that prisoners, because they don't lose their residence, they don't lose their permanent residence upon incarceration, that's already in our Minnesota Constitution, that they should be being counted at the address where they came from. So it's not so much an expansion as just writing a flaw that's currently related specifically to the prison system.
Thank you. Representative Nadeau?
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Any further questions or discussion? Seeing none, I will renew my motion that House File 4043 as amended be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails, and House File 4043 as amended is re-referred to the General Register. Thank you very much. Next, we have House File 3182. Chair Olson, if you'll please come forward. Good morning, Chair Olson. I will move House File 3182 to be re-referred to the General Register. If you'd like to tell us about your bill.
Right. Thank you, Madam Chair, and I have the DE-1, too.
Fine.
And my comments will reflect the DE-1 when I hope it is adopted.
Members, why don't we just go ahead and get the bill in the order that the Chair would like. Is there any discussion to the DE-1? Seeing none, I will move adoption of the DE-1 to House File 3182. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails, and the DE-1 is adopted. To your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 3182 updates the section of statute that governs the Public Employee Insurance Program, also known as PEEP. This is a voluntary health insurance pool school district, city, and county employees can opt to join and has been in existence since 1989. This pool currently contains 289 groups within it, which equates to coverage of for 17,000 employees and 35,000 total lives. 20,000 of those insured lives are through school district employees who have opted to be in PEEP. In January of this year, MMB, the agency that administers this program, conducted an analysis of the pool structure compared to other states with similar insurance pools for public employees. The changes the DE aims to make, increasing the number of years the groups are required to participate in the pool, is one of the recommendations from this report. The bill, as amended, also lowers the threshold for groups to exit the pool if the premiums reach higher, 20% or higher. These changes will offer some stability to the pool based on what is working in other states. And stability to the pool means lower health care costs for employees and for the state, which ultimately covers a share of these health care costs through the Gen Ed formula to school districts. And here with me is Adam Janiak, a negotiation specialist, to explain these changes in the context of how PEEP operates.
Thank you. And when you're ready, if you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Adam Janiak, and I'm in the Negotiations Department of Education, Minnesota. Thank you for this opportunity to talk about this bill that will help educators with the current crisis of rising health care costs. PEEP is a state of Minnesota health plan available to cities, counties, and school districts. PEEP leverages off the state employees plan, CGIP, and uses the negotiating clout of their size to offer very low administrative costs and multiple network carriers to the member groups. It's important to note that as we talk about pooling and group size, the larger the risk pool, the more predictable and stable the premiums tend to be. Although PEEP was created years prior, schools were first allowed to participate in 2009. Since that time, PEEP has played vital roles for school groups, both small and large, across Minnesota. By ensuring competition in the marketplace, PEEP has saved districts and members over $100 million premium dollars over the past 30-plus years. Additionally, PEEP serves an essential role, especially for our smallest schools, in that it is required to insure any public employer group. Other carriers can and do simply elect to not insure high claim groups. Last year's example is Greenbush Middle River. They had no bids returned from their RFPs except for PEEP. And PEEP was able to provide them a 6% renewal, which is significantly lower than many groups are seeing these days. The past few years have been some of the most difficult in all areas for our educator workforce, and accessing affordable, high-quality health care was no exception. The pandemic created great volatility in the market, which stressed the ability of the PEEP pool to operate as it should. Participation in PEEP is voluntary, which creates potential challenges in the world of risk pooling, with mandatory pools being much more likely to be stable and predictable. But voluntary pools can still operate in a very beneficial manner and be successful when structured correctly. In response to these volatile times, MMB hired a consultant group to complete a review and study the plan to see what improvements could be made. The consultant set some very clear suggestions to improve PEEP, using other similar programs across the country as comparisons. They shared ideas for participation, underwriting, plan complexity, and communication that could be very helpful to the plan. Currently, when a group enters or re-enrolls in PEEP, it is a two-year commitment. This bill would extend that period to 4 years and increase the stability of the pool. When comparing to other states with successful voluntary pools, one of the most important factors was having a longer period of commitment. Stopping short of mandatory participation, the consultants shared this was the next best step. PEEP also has a renewal rate threshold built in that if a group reaches it, they do have the option to leave at an earlier date. Currently, that threshold is a 50% renewal increase, but this bill would lower it to 20%. This would not only increase the trust of those looking to join, but also demonstrate the intent of PEEP to operate as a large pool. With these changes, groups will be committed for longer periods of time and increase the stability of the pool. Giving school district employees the option for being in a more stable pool will help shield them from the rising costs of a healthcare industry that is draining working people's paychecks with no end in sight, given the lack of federal regulation in this area. We appreciate the committee considering these changes to PEEP.
Thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate hearing from you. I don't have any other testifiers who've signed up in advance. Is there anyone in the public who would like to speak? Seeing none, we'll go to member discussion. Lead Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Olson, good to see you here. In the bill itself on lines 5.4, there is my favorite, dots. What is the appropriation for this reflective of your DE? Can you help us understand that?
Chair Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Nash, the DE takes all of that out. There is no cost to this bill.
And Madam Chair.
Lead Nash, I just saw that Representative Nadeau had a question. Would you rather go to his question or continue with
just
your
have
own?
Another small.
All right, please go ahead.
I usually have multi-part questions.
All right, no worries.
And Representative Olson, Madam Chair, did this originate in any of the education committees? Has this been to an education committee? I don't remember hearing the referral. If we could help me understand where this is going next.
The re-referral was to the general register.
And there was a question there as to did
Chair
it go
Olson.
To?
Sure. Representative Nash, Chair Cleveland. So this only touches MMB is the for the PEEP program, MMB is the only area that it would touch. So this is the only committee that has jurisdiction over this.
Lead Nash. Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks, Representative Olson, and thanks for having the conversation with me yesterday on the floor. I missed the amendment deadline. My apologies. I intended to bring an amendment that would do exactly what your testifier talked about, and that's ensuring competition in the marketplace. And that is, you know, what your bill does is I think it does a good thing for PEEP. I think it extends the time that the plan can provide that more stability going down the road
But I think in part of the problem with PEEP, as I reviewed the Siegel proposal, is that it's trying to create that marketplace and trying to create that public option for school districts without mandating their participation, but it's still open for individuals to use Venture, which, and I think part of the stability problem with this is that, I mean, I think the risk pool is increasingly getting, because the lower level need are going into Minsure. So I think there's some struggles there, but I still think that if we're going to extend this option for PEEP, we should also extend that option for Blue Cross. We should extend that option for health partners, because I think that will continue to drive down costs to municipalities and school districts. So as this goes forward, I mean, I want you to talk about why you carved out just PEEP. Can you answer that? Why we're just focusing on PEEP and not focusing on the rest of the partners that are in here?
Chair Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I know the testifier may comment more to the first part of your comment and question, Representative Nadeau. But to the point, so this is just one bill dealing with PEEP. It doesn't mean there can't be other legislation or other work done in healthcare. We know that's abroad. We're all trying to, I think, look to lower the cost of healthcare in a variety of ways. And so this is just one bill dealing directly with PEEP. And to Representative Nash's point, you know, a narrow focus. We're here dealing with just this bill right now. But to your other comments, I can certainly, the testifier has any thoughts.
And I would say that's probably more of a question for Commerce as opposed to State Gov. If you would like to address the question, please state your name again for the record and begin.
Yes, Adam Janiak, and just correct me if I'm misinterpreting your question, but one of the things that state law does allow right now is for a Blue Cross Blue Shield Health Partners or any other entity to contract with the school district from 2 to 5 years. So they can have contracts currently up to 5 years. What law has right now for PEEP is 2 years and 2 years only. And so based on two parts, one, the consultant's feedback that a longer period would be beneficial, and two, there not being that option in PEEP, just like you said, the Blue Cross Blue Shield and other folks have, they have those 2 to 5 year options. This would cement or codify in that commitment so that the stability is created.
Representative Nadeau.
Well, and thank you, Madam Chair. And I wasn't aware of that. I didn't know that those other providers could have longer periods. And so my final question is, I am supportive of creating this when it creates this study and design committee. And I just want to question Representative Olson. Is one of the criteria, so in the Siegel study, it reported that, you know, on average that the PEEP rates were 7.2% higher on average than the competing plans. Is that going to be, I hope, one of the major focuses that is going to try to figure out how do we drive down the cost for those members who choose PEEP? For, you know, those schools that decide to go this, is that going to be one of the focuses? I didn't see the mission, what the goals are of the study, the specific goals, but I'm hoping that that's it, is driving down costs, increasing access, building, you know, more stability. I'm assuming that's all there.
Chair Olson.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Nadeau. I mean, the point, and as I said in my opening comments, the point of this is to create, we're not adopting all of the changes in the report you mentioned, but what we're trying to do is offer stability, which then does drive down costs. So that is the ultimate goal here, is stability, so to, you know, minimize the volatility to drive down costs.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Cousins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And without having a fiscal note on here, I understand that the author said that there is no cost on there. I don't know if we normally would even have a fiscal note that says that, but I'm wondering to the testifier representing the school board associations, is there any financial cost or liability or mandate on our local school boards with this?
Chair Olson, did you want to address this first? Or?
Madam Chair, I think the testifier can speak to this.
Please proceed.
Yes. Thank you. Again, Adam Janiak, I'm from Education Minnesota, so not from the School Board Association. So if you have a direct question for them, you could ask them. But there would be no direct cost. Actually, if we look at how districts go out to bid, talking about a state fiscal note, there shouldn't be any cost whatsoever, right? Like that we've cleared that up. But there actually should be a savings for districts as you go forward. Right now, across the state, you have RFP processes that districts allocate resources for every two or possibly three, four, 5 years, depending on the length of their contract. And they also, many of them hire brokers and others that help them through the process, but are paid commissions and fees to do that. This would, if they were committed for 4 years instead of two, essentially cut that in half as far as the RFP process and possibly, which if you're a participant in PEEP, you don't need to hire a broker, release them from needing that at all.
Representative Posnick, follow-up?
Yeah, if I could get clarification, I appreciate the your comments. Would we not normally have a fiscal note if it's going to the general register with, for local impact just to verify? I mean, I appreciate the testimony, but we don't have anybody from school boards here. There were
Lee Kosnick, as you know, the author of the bill is the chair of Ways and Means. Chair Olson, would you like to address the question?
Thank you, Representative Cleaverne. Yes, like a hawk, I would make sure anything with fiscal impact would come in front of Ways and Means. but to this bill in particular, I don't know if nonpartisan staff would want to comment on processes around, but as was mentioned by the testifier, we've worked with MMB. They're aware, you know, there is no cost to the state. It's two policy changes, and to the testifier's point, you know, it may have a local impact of actually, you know, savings costs, but in terms of what we do here and impacts to the general fund, this does not have an impact on the general fund.
Well, Madam Chair, I appreciate the comments.
Representative Kosnick.
Just wanted to verify, you know, we can think something, but having to actually know and what it is to our local jurisdictions, our school boards, is important to note.
Thank you very much. Representative Herr.
Thank you, Chair Cleaverne. And I just wanted to say thank you to Representative Chair Olson for bringing this bill forward. I was actually talking to teachers in St. Paul schools who had left the St. Paul plan and went into PEEP, and they had seen huge increases, and they thought that this would be a more stable way and more cost-effective way. This is the option to help with competition, right? And so, and I think that just to maybe, you know, I worked in the private sector for many years. I worked for insurance companies in that time period, and really the, what you're changing here in PEEP really does we don't have a fiscal note, not because we're waiting for one. It's because there isn't a fiscal impact. Because the things that we're asking here is just changing and assumptions that go into the rates of the plans. And so that's why this is really important, that if there's so much movement in between plans and there's no stability in that, then you're losing those who are the most healthy, which it makes lowers the plan's rates. And so this doesn't change anything. All it changes is the assumptions that go into it so that the insurance company or whoever is rating this is allowed a stable pool of people in order to maintain those rates. And so this is a really good bill, and it's really reasonable to put these things and these assumptions into place. So I just wanted to say thank you for bringing this forward, because it will help my St. Paul teachers.
Thank you very much. Any closing comments? Oh, Representative Nadeau, did not see that you had another question.
I'm sorry. And I just wanted to clarify once and yet again, I checked, and my understanding is the Health Insurance Transparency Act requires school districts to go out for bid for their health insurance every 2 years. Do I have that wrong? So you said that competing providers can offer 2 to 5 year plans. And if the schools are required to go out every 2 years, am I missing something?
Chair Olson.
Thank you, Representative. I will turn that over to my testifier.
All right. When you're ready, please proceed.
Yes. So you're referring to HIDA, the Health Insurance Transparency Act, which is a collection of laws that do just that. They create transparency around the healthcare process, especially around RFPs. And yes, if it is a 2-year contract, that is the minimum that they have to do that. But if there is an agreement made so that there is a 3-year contract, let's say, then you wouldn't have to go through that HIDA process until that third year.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Madam Chair,
under the lead Kosnick, please go.
Thank you. Under this chapter of 43A.316, I wonder if staff could help me understand what the subdivision 11 refers to, a proposal from school district response. Is that pertinent to this at all? My thought is this does impact school districts. We have a letter from the Minnesota School Boards Associations with voicing some concerns, and I think the referral you know, I'm curious.
Lead Posnick, you're referring to this letter, is that correct, that we have in our packet?
Yes.
And you're asking nonpartisan for some clarification about the statute, is that correct?
Well, within that chapter of law, subdivision 11, proposals from school districts' responses required. How does that play into this? And I'm wondering why this bill isn't being heard or at least having discussion in the education department.
Okay, you're referencing subdivision.
Education committee.
You're 11. Referencing subdivision 11, and the letter references subdivision 5.
No, I'm looking in chapter law.
Okay, I'm just trying to figure out what you're referencing.
Yeah, chapter 43A. Within mm-hmm. that, there is I just asking for clarification from nonpartisan staff.
No, I appreciate that. You were referencing the letter. The letter references 5.
Understood.
But you were referencing 11. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, thank you. Nonpartisan, I'm not sure who would want to address this.
Madam Chair and Representative Kosnick.
Ms. Griffin, if you'd please proceed.
I'm actually not familiar with this provision, this particular chapter of the statutes 43A isn't one that I spend a lot of time in, but I'd be happy to look into this further after committee.
Thank you very much. Is there a further follow-up?
Well, Madam Chair, I would move that this bill be referred to the education committee that deals with this more properly, especially within that chapter of law that this deals with. It specifically talks about school districts, and I think that committee would be just to make sure about the local impact on our school districts, especially in reference to the letter in the packet from the School Board Association. So if it's appropriate, I would request to refer it to the Education Committee and would like a roll call vote.
There has been, that's an official motion?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, there is a motion that this bill be re-referred to Education as opposed to the General Register. Roll call vote has been requested. Please call the roll.
Chair Cleavorn?
No.
Chair Cleavorn, no. Vice Chair Hewitt?
No.
Vice Chair Hewitt, no. Lee Nash, excused. Representative Bonner?
No.
Representative Bonner, no. Representative Berg?
No.
Representative Berg, no. Representative Freiberg, excused. Representative Hansen?
No.
Representative Hansen, no. Representative Harder?
Aye.
Representative Harder, aye. Representative Herr?
No.
Representative Herr, no. No. Representative Joy?
Aye.
Representative Joy, aye. Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Representative Kosnick, aye. Representative Nadeau?
No.
Representative Nadeau, no. Representative Newton?
No.
Representative Newton, no. The ayes are 3, nays are 8, with 2 excused.
With a vote of 3 ayes, 8 nays, 2 excused, the motion does not prevail. Now we'll continue on. Lee Kosnick, you're finished?
Thank you, ma'am. I appreciate the courtesy.
Thank you so much. And I will renew my motion. What would you like to close your bill?
Thank you, Chair Cleavorn, and thank you to the committee for the discussion. And the intent is to make these 2 small changes solely within the PEAK program within the jurisdiction of MMB to hopefully lower costs and provide stability to folks who need it in getting insurance. So thank you for the consideration.
Thank you, and thank you very much for watching out for our teachers. I appreciate that. And with that, I will renew my motion that House File 3182 as amended, be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
The motion is adopted. House File 3182 is re-referred to the General Register. Thank you very much. Now we have with us Representative Tapke. Welcome to the committee, Representative Tabke. I will move that House File 4553 be re-referred to Ways and Means. Would you like to describe your bill, please?
Thank you very much, Chair Cleaborn and members. So House File 4553 is a bill that we are working on with state troopers. And we are working on a way. There is a significant gap right now in the number of state troopers that we have funded and the number of state troopers we have actually working. So there are a lot of open spots right now that we want to make sure stay filled to make sure that we're protecting all of the state of Minnesota. And so what this bill will do is to help is a stopgap type measure to help keep troopers in the job as long as they would like to be in the job and as long as they would as long as they are welcomed back. And so with that, we have been to pensions and we're laid over in pensions, and we're working on getting this bill to the floor because what we want to do is make sure that we are getting as much information out to troopers as possible to let them know that this is a way where they can stay in the job if they would like to. So the way the bill works is that troopers can retire at the mandatory age or whenever they work between 55 and 60, and then they can come back onto the job and keep their pensions working and keep moving forward. And so that this is already work that is being done within the rules, but we're going to put this from rules into statute to make sure that everyone is able to use it well. And we have Mike Ledoux here from the State Troopers Association, Madam Chair.
Okay. And I see that there's a 1A. Is that yours?
Oh, yes. The 1A is mine, yes.
Okay. Would you like to speak to the amendment?
The 1A gets the bill in the order that we'd like it to be in.
Thank you. All those in favor of, is there any discussion to the 1A? Seeing none, all those in favor of adoption of the 1A, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion prevails and the A1 is adopted. So members, we have two people from the public who wish to testify on this bill. Are you ready to move to testimony? Okay. I would like to call up Mike Ledoux. And it, when you're ready, if you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Mike Ledoux. I've had the honor and privilege of being a state trooper for the last 30 years. I'm the president of the Minnesota State Patrol Troopers Association, and I'm also the elected representative on the pension board for the state patrol plan. I come before you today in full support of HF 4553, and I extend gratitude to Representative Tapke for bringing this legislation forward. This bill enables state law enforcement officers to continue their service without facing financial penalties when they reach retirement age. Currently, we have a significant number of active employees that will be reaching full retirement age, 205 members. Additionally, 2,264 members of the para police and fire plan will reach full retirement age within the next 5 years as well, for a total of 2,469 individuals. Recruitment challenges are prevalent, with a noticeable decline in applicants locally and nationally. For example, our traditional academy only received 77 applicants, which is a sharp contrast to the over 1,200 applicants received during my hiring process. The post board currently has 27 pages of job announcements, with only 586 individuals passing the post licensing exam in 2023. The scarcity of law enforcement students in the college to career pipeline highlights the urgent need for recruitment and retention strategies targeting experienced state law enforcement officers. This bill directly addresses the pressing need by incentivizing retired State Patrol plan members to rejoin service without impacting their retirement annuity. This initiative not only encourages seasoned professionals to stay engaged, but it also enriches the skill and knowledge pool within the agency served by the State Patrol retirement plan, leading to improved law enforcement outcomes for our communities. The financial stability of the State Patrol retirement plan is boosted by the continued contributions of reemployed members, along with the essential employer and supplemental contributions. This dual approach ensures stability and security for retired officers while maintaining the fiscal integrity of the plan. Your support of HF 4553 would significantly contribute to enhancing public safety. We must remain focused on recruiting, retaining, and respecting these dedicated public safety professionals. Madam Chair, I'd be happy to answer any follow-up questions.
Thank you very much. We have one more member of the public to testify. Patrick Miles, if you would like to come forward. When you're ready, if you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Patrick Miles. I'm the president of the Minnesota State Patrol Supervisors Association, which represents the supervisors of the State Patrol, which includes lieutenants, captains, and majors. Like Mr. Ledoux said, I want to give our full support for this House File 4553. There's a severe recruitment retention problem in our profession within the State Patrol also. So any way we can help close that gap with retention, we are in full support of. So
thank you very much. Yep. Great. I appreciate it. Is there anyone else from the public who wishes to testify? Seeing none, we'll move to member questions. Are there any questions? Lead Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate this bill. I think it's important to do what we can to help our law enforcement. This goes to a step to help with the workforce shortages, and this kind of solution is something that we should probably do in many areas to encourage retirement age type to stay in the workforce, stay engaged, because I think that's a better solution than some of the other ones that we've been hearing. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Tabke, for bringing this forward. You know, a few years ago, we had to adjust the salaries for the MLEA bargaining unit and also provide this differentiation between the supervisory unit. So, you know, that was one part to bring them into parity with the other law enforcement pieces. But the pension side is really critical for recruitment. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair Hansen. And Representative Tabke, if you'd like to. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Nadeau. You're always there at the end. Usually you speak before the lead. Please go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'm going to start. I'm not very tall. Can you remind me where this is being referred to?
This is being referred to Ways and Means.
Okay. And, Madam Chair, I'm lucky enough to sit on pensions, and it just seems that this is a I support this bill completely. And I just find it a little bit interesting that it seems to me that the custom and usage of the House has been to put these pension bills together and kind of roll them through out of the Pension Commission. And there's a number of bills that the Pension Commission is hearing. And I'm wondering, why is this being pulled out to run on its own outside? And this amendment was not adopted in the Pension Commission. And I'm just curious as to how, and maybe this is a question for the author, I'm just wondering why we're pulling this out of the way that we normally make modifications to our pensions.
Chair Tapke.
Yeah, Chair Cleavorn, Representative Nadeau, that's a great question. So I'll take your second question first. And so with the amendment, this is the 2A amendment that we did adopt in pensions. So that's what this one, that's what this is. And so that was heard in pensions, and we laid it over in pensions because we needed to do some more work on deciding what the exact fiscal impact that the 2A amendment would have. And it turned out that the 2A amendment would have a net positive impact on the pensions for within the pensions world. And so that was good there. And so it's living both in the pensions omnibus and moving forward as a standalone. So it's living in both places, as I am wont to do with bills as they go forward, and make sure we get them done. And this one is, it's really important that we make sure that people know that this is out there, because it is, in my opinion, having it live within the rules world right now, it is not getting as much use as it can and should, and so we want to make sure that it gets as much impact to help our troopers out as much as possible.
Thank you,
Representative Tadke. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Nadeau. And seeing no further questions, if you'd like to close your bill.
Thank you, Chair Cleavorn. I appreciate you hearing this and helping to move forward so we can get this done for troopers. So it's a really positive step that will have good impacts on everyone. So thank you, Chair.
Thank you. So I will renew my motion that House File 4553, as amended, be re-referred to Ways and Means. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion prevails, and House File 4553 is re-referred as amended to Ways and Means.
Thank you.
Thank you. And members, that concludes our business for today. So I will remind us that we're all going to meet on Thursday, March 21st. And with that, our meeting is adjourned.